Cooking turkey is a journey. You know, that book, the Choose Your Own Adventure book, right? That's the same that applies with making a turkey, right? Larding, barding, basting, butter bath, you know, wet brine, dry brine, rest it, cook it separately, spatchcock it, right? All of those questions. Do I have to tent it? Do I have to stuff it? Can I cook my stuffing separately? Can I use a spice rub, right? All of those questions will be answered.
Today, we're talking turkey. We're sharing our turkey memories and stories and lots of turkey tips. For many of us, we're getting into the holiday season, and that often includes a full turkey dinner. It can be one of the biggest joys of the year, or it can be one of the biggest culinary challenges you face. Either way, everyone will find some turkey inspiration from what Kirsty calls Jody's Turkey Manifesto. It will answer all of your questions, such as, should you brine? Or in my case, what is brining? We discuss what temperature is safe, and can you cook a turkey the day before? Jody and Kirsty not only answer these questions and more, they also break down the process into manageable steps and debunk a few turkey myths along the way. Whether you're a seasoned pro or roasting your very first bird, this episode is packed with turkey tips and inspiration to help you find the joy of cooking this holiday season. Hi, Jody. Hi, Kirsty. We're going to talk turkey today, which I'm very excited about.
Very exciting. Yes. Yeah.
Well, we're getting into some people's turkey season. And so we thought we should do that now, early enough to help people prepare, give them tips. And maybe I can get around to making a turkey. I've never done it really. So we'll see. But before we get to that, because I love learning about all kinds of new recipes, Kirsty and Jody, can you tell me something you cooked last week?
Oh, well, yeah, we definitely cooked something. that's a yes. There's what? I got two things. So it's been kind of cool, actually. Every week, my hairdresser has been like calling me with either, you know, recipes that she wants to try, that like she'll just make this stuff up, or recipes that I've made in the past that she's had before. And she's like, hey, can you make this again? Right. And we do a little system. Right. And so the one thing I cooked last week was, and Jody and I used to make it all the time in our brick and mortar studio. And that's a zucchini, meat and cheese lasagna. So think everything you love about lasagna, minus the pasta, insert zucchini, a couple little different tweaks to how you bring it together. But man, oh man, yes, I did that last week. And I was reminded as to why we made it all the time, why we loved it, why it's a little bit special from your pasta one, how you feel after. And so, of course, I wrote a blog about it. And you can find the full recipe and all the tips and tricks in our recipe blog. That was number one.
Wow. And so can I ask, why is zucchini the substitute for the pasta?
I think it, Jody, maybe you can remind me. I think it started as like, when we started making it, like carbs were the devil.
Yes. And I remember that. And so I know there was lots of substitutes for pasta. Is zucchini a substitute for pasta, or does it just fit with the lasagna recipe?
Amy, I don't know. I know you don't, like, I know you're cooking, you're improving every week and we're really proud of you, but do you garden? Like, people that garden always plant like two plants of zucchinis and then end up with 75 zucchinis that they don't know what to do with. So then there's all of these recipes for, right, spiralized zucchini, zucchini lasagna, zucchini cake, zucchini loaf, zucchini muffin, zucchini fritter, right? Like all of these things. But, and so it's a great way to use it up. Ours definitely was, because there are always cooking trends. So this was from the wheat belly era, when everyone thought that, you know, wheat and gluten was the enemy to everything. As we all know now, it's like sugar is the real devil, but it might be something different later on, right?
Next week.
Yeah. And that's why it came up, because we had a fridge full of food that people could take, and we needed to just to make sure we had something for those that did not want to eat gluten.
Yeah, gluten-free or not, though, I was, yeah, reminded as to how delicious, how a little bit lighter it is, but you're still getting all the feels and the satisfaction of lasagna.
So we're going to go from lighter fare to full-on turkey dinner. There are some holidays for some people coming up, and so I wanted to talk about turkey because we all love it. I haven't had a whole lot of success in making it.
you know, the turkey is really the main event. It's sort of the centerpiece, and it's that one dish. It really sometimes can make or break a family gathering. And so we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about our childhood memories, some professional tips, how to get it done maybe without setting off a smoke alarm, and all of those things. So I'm going to give you a little context of my turkey memories and where I'm at because of where I came from. So my memories of mostly Christmas dinner is sort of my mom getting up really early to have to put the turkey in all day and then running upstairs to get dressed and then coming back down fully dressed to finish the meal and not really having any fun. So that's sort of part of where my maybe not love of making the turkey comes from. And then the men roll in and carve it. So, you know, a very traditional sort of Christmas upbringing. Or the other scenario was, you know, because we only had one oven, and that's one of my questions, how do you make turkey dinner with one oven? My grandparents would cook it in their oven and just bring it over, so I never sometimes didn't even see the turkey being made, and it would just sort of arrive at our house. So that's sort of where I come from. And, you know, when we talked earlier about why we wanted to do this episode, Jody was starting to throw around terms I had never heard before, so I'd like to talk a little bit about that. So why don't we start with some turkey memories from both of you, and then we'll start talking about making a turkey and how we can all get it done.
I don't know. I have good turkey memories. I think Donna put on a good spread. She did a good meal. She did a good turkey. She did, you know, go through all, as we got older, my two older brothers, and, you know, we talk about, you know, lunch at breakfast, dinner at lunch, like we're obsessed with food. And, you know, we did get a little bit like, okay, how can we make this better? And that's when, you know, probably in the 90s, things like the brining came into play. And so I do have memories of experiment. I have memories of my brother sacrificing a pair of oven mitts and flipping the turkey over halfway. Like there was, and Jody's going to talk about this. There's just so many ways of how to answer the question. How do I keep it moist? Right. So we tried all those as a family. We tried the deep fry. That was scary. My brother built a deep fryer. Like he built a turkey deep fryer because, you know, he's a tradesman. And what wasn't really noticed was how wet the turkey was. Of course, you know, oil and water don't mix. And, you know, the garage got quite scary there. In the garage even.
Yes, not even outside. Even I know you're supposed to keep the barbecue outside.
It was raining, right? Like it was cold. It was October, you know, and like, and so we're like, hey, let's just, you know, roll out the cars and do it in the garage. And, I have good overall, you know, good turkey. My mom always cooked well with like nothing needed salt at the table. Right. So for me, that's a win. Yeah.
Aww, that's so nice.
So my turkey experience isn't a turkey at all. We didn't like turkey. I didn't know that I like it now. My parents didn't like it. They like chicken. Or it could be that we bought 25 chickens and filled a freezer at the beginning of the, you know, of whatever season is chicken season or whenever we needed them, right? I grew up with a family of six, so it was always a half cow, you know, a case of butter. You know, a case of bagels because my great aunt worked at the school cafeteria and lots of chickens. So we would just have a chicken instead of a turkey, and it was delicious. Like chicken, you know, they can be a bit smaller. They're definitely fattier, so have a bit more moisture. There is a little bit more finesse when making a turkey. So first you've got the permission to cook a chicken if you prefer a chicken. You don't have to do a turkey. My family now, there's six of us. My husband doesn't like turkey at all.
Who doesn't like turkey? How could that? It's not offensive.
I know. I still love them. But like, come on, turkey. So for a couple times, I was like, okay, we'll have something else. And then my kids were like, we like it. We like the gravy. We like mashed potatoes. We like the turkey. So come on, mom. So I still make it.
Aww.
It sounds to me, Amy, like that you either had turkey trauma or a complete disconnect from that turkey.
Yeah, like when it arrives at your house.
Just arrived at my house. It was amazing because my grandparents live right around the corner. And, you know, I don't know. I don't really know because there's a lot of dishes going around. And I mean, my mother-in-law pulls it off all the time. And it's always very good. The meal is always very good. But as a kid, it was like a lot of there wasn't a lot of fun or joy going on around the turkey cooking. And it's intimidating, the whole, like, all the things you're talking about. And so we've had a couple of times a turkey roll from Stemler's, and it's been excellent because I don't have to stick my hand in it and pull anything out. It doesn't take all day, and I can make other things. And that kind of stemmed from, you know, Kirstie, you mentioned this about dropping kids off and being busy and not always having the time necessary to put it all together. So it's a great substitute. But Stephen loves turkey. It's one of his favorites. And to be able to put a meal together like that, I think it'd be a fun thing to do if I knew all the right things. But you said brine, and I don't even know what that is.
Okay, so we're going to demystify all these turkey things.
Right? Yes.
We're going to get Stephen that turkey on his table because there's nothing better, and Kirstie can attest to this, than walking into a house and just being bathed in the aroma of like a roasted turkey, right? Like,
yes, I agree.
So like part of it is the anticipation and the smell you get from roasting it. So you either had the fear and the annoyance of those men coming for the big ceremony of carving a bird that they didn't even know till 5 minutes before that it was happening
with an electric knife.
Yes. Especially like in the late 80s, because it was the tool of the late 80s. So yeah.
Just butchering the shit out of it, right? You have to bleep that one. Or the turkey came and you didn't get to have all those smells. So you should have ran over to your grandma.
I should have hung out at my grandma's.
You can get those turkey smells happening. Yeah. So making a turkey nowadays is about decision-making. Your time you have, the expense that you've got. If you've got one, you know, if you got a great deal on a frozen turkey, right? Because it's fresh or frozen, then you can make that decision. Right? You make a decision about deep frying, traditional roasting, smoking, right? Everyone has smokers these days, so you can smoke them, right? Do you need to have that stuffing in the cavity of that bird?
That I actually know, because my mother-in-law doesn't always do it. She makes it outside, and it seems easier, and it's just kind of, you can time things better, I think.
For me, it just makes more sense. And we always struggled as a family because we wanted more stuffing. So how I do my stuffing, I did learn from my mom, and we roast it outside of or bake it outside of the bird with turkey necks.
Oh, cool. Is that the thing you pull out from inside?
Yeah, the neck.
The thing you pull out. I know it doesn't look like a neck. It looks like something else, but it's a turkey neck.
Looks like a phone.
Yeah, phone. That's what it looks like. That big, long, curvy, phallic-looking thing looks like a phone.
Yeah, it comes with it for free. So you want to utilize that, brown it up, and, you know, immerse it in your stuffing. We'll definitely give you that recipe.
Okay, I like this. Now, before we go too far, sizing is always an issue too. So can you give us some parameters? If I have four people, is it a per pound, per person thing? How do I find, order, buy the right turkey?
So generally you need 1 to 1.5 pounds of turkey mm-hmm. per person.
Okay, perfect.
And I'm going to tell you, like, don't go for the 1 pound, go for the 1.5. If you're going through this, you want leftovers.
Yes.
Like, why would you make a turkey when everyone's going to eat it? Like, right, everyone eats the fruits of your labor, and you don't get to sit down the next day with Kirstie's ultimate turkey sandwich.
It's my death row meal. You know that. Even my kids know it's my death row meal, a turkey sandwich.
Tell me more, because I have to say I'm actually very good with the leftovers, because when Steve and I were younger and we would go home after whatever turkey dinner we were at, people would give us the leftovers and I would then do things with that because I wasn't part of turkey making. So tell me more about this sandwich, Kirstie.
Really, there's not a lot to tell. I got to say, it's like turkey, mayo, bread, lettuce, like doesn't even have to. I don't really zhuzh it up. Jody and I used to make the ultimate. We used to do Thanksgiving on a bun, where we'd get the stuffing on there. I actually don't like cranberry sauce.
I don't either. Now, do you put gravy in the sandwich, or are we dipping the sandwich?
No,
just as is.
Toasted turkey sandwich, like a diner style.
Yes, love it. Okay, so the turkey sandwich. Now, that is obviously at the end of the whole turkey experience. Let's go back. We have the bird, and we are ready. It's sitting in the kitchen. What happens next?
Well, you had to decide what bird you were buying. Are you buying fresh or frozen? Right? From a fresh perspective, right? It's a bit more expensive. It's juicier. It's just going to be more fresh flavor overall. Mm-hmm. a frozen turkey, right? You might get it on sale. You just need to make sure that you have adequate time to thaw it. You're not throwing a frozen bird in the oven or in the deep fryer or anywhere, right? It needs to thaw out. And for every 5 pounds of turkey, you need 24 hours. So there needs to be thought process in that.
That's a hot tip, Jody.
That's a long time, because you're right. That's the worst. If you have everything ready to go and it's not defrosted, that can really mess everything up. So let's talk a little bit about how our decisions around cooking the turkey. So let's maybe talk a little bit about how we cook the turkey in the oven. And let's talk a little bit how we maybe smoke it, because Jody, you're right. Lots of people have an outdoor option when they're cooking the turkey as well. So I have the turkey and it's sitting in my fridge, defrosted or fresh, raw. What happens next?
So for you in particular, and making a turkey for the first time, I want to take the stress out of it for you. I'm going to highly recommend that you make it ahead of time.
You can do that? How far ahead can I make it?
Mm-hmm. I like to do it just a day or two ahead, right? Like, I don't want to freeze the frozen turkey. So I generally, you know, if I'm having company, you have to clean and get ready and do all of these things. So it's nice at the same time to put on, in my life, it's Conway Twitty, right? Like, that's what my dad listened to when I was a kid, my mom and dad. So I've got music in the background, cleaning and roasting a turkey all at the same time. No pressure of a timeline of someone showing up at, you know, 2 o'clock for hors d'oeuvres or anything. You just slightly undercook the turkey, right? And allow it to completely rest. And the resting allows the juices to redistribute. Then you can carve it cold.
Oh, wow.
And then you can put it into, you know, a container to reheat, right? Even a roasting pan with a little bit of stock and some butter, because I love to butter. I like to butter bath my turkey. And while that's roasting, right, that turkey neck, or I order extra turkey necks, I also order some extra turkey bones, because at the butcher shop, they'll have that, because some people just want a turkey breast, right? And if you have 4 people, I highly recommend just buying a couple turkey breasts. You can easily brine them. You can slow roast them. And you can have all of the fixings. So we've got a 1-hour turkey dinner, and it really hits the turkey dinner spot.
Do I reheat it? How do I reheat it then when it's time to eat the turkey?
So within that little bit of stock and butter that's in, just like a hot oven, you know, no more than 15 minutes, right? Just till it's hot. It doesn't even have to be smoking hot, right? Like, you never have it really hot. So just till it's cooked through, or just till it's warm. And then it's already sliced and ready to go. And people, then you just open it up and serve it. You made the potatoes ahead of time, those turkey necks and extra bones. You made a stock that turned into gravy, because you need lots of gravy, right? Like, 2 cups of gravy for a family of 6 is an embarrassment.
Yes. No, we are a gravy. Well, the kids don't all love gravy, but Stephen and I do. And I mean, it's definitely come from a package. So talk to me a little bit about how I make lots of gravy from the turkey. I don't know how. I know people do it, but I don't understand.
So it happens outside, generally kind of outside it. We don't eat wings in our, right? Kirst, do you eat wings?
I mean, there's no need for them, right? They're fairly tough, right? Especially if they've been roasting alongside that whole time. So yeah, you can use the wings, necks, and all that kind of stuff to essentially make turkey stock. And then you can use some of your drippings to make a gravy. But if you're starting off with turkey stock instead of just water, you can make a whole lot more gravy.
So I have my stock and I have the drippings, and I knew both of those things. Well, I actually didn't know the stock. That's a great way to make more, I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Most people I've seen make them just from the drippings. So what do I do with those 2 things, and how do I turn that into gravy?
So then when you have got the turkey, right, like there's inevitably going to be turkey fat, or maybe there's a couple pieces of turkey fat that you could render. So essentially render means fry, just like you would bake and fry, and it produces this fat. You just have that pure turkey fat. You add equal amounts of flour into that, creating a roux. There's our word for the day, a roux, which is a thickener, and used in many different applications, but it's equal parts flour and fat, and cook that out a little bit. Then you're going to slowly stir in, and Kirsty does this so well, just, you know, really just stirs in the stock a little bit at a time to thicken it up and create a nice, delicious gravy, essentially what it would be called. And then when your turkey's done roasting, right, you've got all the drippings, and even on the smoker, I will have a pan that collects those drippings. And whatever I've collected in that pan, I put into that gravy just to bump up the flavor.
Wow, that sounds very yummy.
Yeah, and you could do all this ahead of time. I did what you did last Christmas, Jody, and instead of worrying about a turkey, I was drinking Caesars, and, you know, all we had to do was warm it up in the oven.
Wow. Oh, I'm so excited to do it ahead of time. This is amazing.
Yeah, it is time is the thing that causes the pressure.
Yes, it does.
I want to rewind a little bit, because there is a question that there's a word that you asked, and we haven't touched on it yet, and it's brining. So before we even get to the oven, right, you said my bird is thawed, it's in the fridge. We are going to do it a day ahead of time, and what's going to help us with that is brining. There's two different ways to brine: wet brine and dry brine. I've adopted the dry brining for a few years now, and that's essentially salting that bird ahead of time. Jody's going to help me with the ratios, but I will dry brine. Say my feast is on Monday, I'm going to dry brine from Friday to Sunday, and then cook it on, let it kind of air out, because when I dry brine, I just generously salt it, wrap it in plastic wrap, unleash it on the Sunday to Monday. It's just overnight drying out in a good way in the refrigerator.
So, Chris, you're looking at about a teaspoon per pound.
Thank you. Of kosher salt?
Of kosher salt, yes, of kosher salt.
And I'm just rubbing it all over the turkey. That's what essentially the definition of brining is.
On the outside of the turkey, underneath the skin, in the cavity, everywhere. Get that salt everywhere.
Like, don't think you're going to do that the night before. Like, you need that time for that salt to kind of really penetrate into the meat. Wet brining is less time, though, isn't it, Jode?
Yes. Yeah. You're looking, like, so dry brining, I have dry bride for 24, but 48 is better. You can do it up to 3 days.
Yeah.
Where wet brining, it's 12 to 24, right? So wet is a salt solution. You're looking at a quarter cup per 4 liters of brine.
And you're immersing. So you're immersing that bird in a bucket of water, essentially, Amy.
Oh, okay.
If you don't use enough salt, you're wasting your time. Right? Like when we first started talking to people about brining, what, like 10, 15 years ago, people would be like, oh Lord, I can't use that much salt, right? Like, but it doesn't work. It's the same as when we cook pasta or we blanch broccoli. If you don't use enough salt, you're just wasting your time and money, because it's not scientifically working. Look at me throwing out those science things, Jody.
Science. Kirsty's science girl today. I like it. I'm making a little switch. Okay, so I've brined my turkey for 2-3 days. And then what happens?
So then, right, it comes down to the temperature that you're cooking it at. I've had someone out in the streets quote me. They're like, you said that 350 is indifference, right? Like 350 oven temperature is like, meh, don't really know. I'm not going to get really great, you know, browning. I'm not going to, you know, really do any low and slow cooking at that temp. It's just indifference. And it's true. So depending on the size, you're either like, there's always the question is hot and fast, low and slow, right? Hot and fast is going to create nice crispy skin, nice browning, right? Right. Really nice, delicious results there. It's going to cook faster, right? But there's going to be more moisture loss. Low and slow, the slower and lower you go, the more moisture that you retain, right? It's not as a shock to that bird. The skin might not be as crispy. So our compromise is both, right? Start out hot and fast, because if you do it at the end, you run the risk of overcooking. You want that initial high heat for the browning of the skin, and then you're going to turn it down low so you've got that more gentle heat where it doesn't push out all the moisture. Crispy skin, juicy bird. That's what you want.
That's a great tip. I love that. So it cooks for a very long time. And I'm always curious about the resting because I, you know, you're supposed to rest the steak and I know you're supposed to rest meat, but I worry that I rest it too long or it gets cold or I wouldn't know. And I know it helps with the flavor. So I pull it out and is it covered? Is it uncovered? How long do I leave it? What's the best practice?
Before we take it to rest, we need to know if it's done.
Good point, Jody. Wow, you must be a chef or something.
You must be. That raw turkey dinner is probably not what people are looking for.
I'm going to say if you want perfection, you need a thermometer.
Yep.
There's no guessing, right? Like, I've got many thermometers. Chefs have, like, you know, I can't help but wear my apron. Got a pocket here. If I was working in a professional kitchen, there'd be a thermometer here. Using temping, doing the stuff all the time. When we smoke briskets like bi-weekly. I'm always like, I'm using my thermometer to help guide me. I know somewhat, but you've got different pounds. You've got different sizes. You know, did you remove the wings and put them in the gravy so you've got less? Did you pull the whole chicken apart and just cook the thighs and the breast separately? You can't just do touch feel because it's just larger. There's just so many things. Buy a good instant read thermometer.
And where do you stick it, Jody?
You stick it. Okay. So that's part of the issue, right? Like they're like, well, breast meat and dark meat and thigh meat cooks differently, right? Your breast meat's done before your thigh meat is, but you need to have it all done, you know, to a safe temperature in order to eat it. So I always pretend that I'm like the animal, whether I'm a cow talking brisket and where briskets are, right? Or if I'm a turkey, right? Like under the leg here. Right? In the kind of armpit of the bird.
It's like where you take your kids' temperature for accuracy.
Yeah. Not touching. You don't want it to touch bone.
Okay.
You want it to get deep enough. And use common sense, right? You're not testing it within the first hour. The first indication that something's cooking is you start to smell it. Just because you smell it doesn't mean it's done. But, you know, it is like, oh, it's getting closer, right? I'm getting all that caramel, that golden crispy skin. I'm getting the drippings happening. That's your first thing. And then you can temp it. You know, your time is a guideline.
What is it? 20 minutes? 20 minutes a pound or something? Isn't that the guideline? Yeah.
And then what's our optimal temperature?
The optimal temperature for the breast meat on a turkey is 157 to 160. You've got carryover temperature once you pull that out of the oven, right? There's still heat. So it's going to take it to the 165, right? For the thighs, you're wanting 175. And if you are adamant about I'm stuffing that bird, my mom did, my grandma's grandma, grandma's did, then you want that stuffing, you have to temp it on the inside, and that needs to be 165. You know, if you want the juiciest, best bird that you're ever going to create, right, I want you to get a thermometer.
Thermometer and brining, those are our two good tips, I think.
You know what I want to talk about, because, you know, we don't want this podcast to take the same length of time it takes to
make the turkey.
I want to say that because I might have the inside scoop because I'm married to the butcher, is there's purchasing options in 2025, right? Like when we grew up and when Jody and I cooked Thanksgiving dinner in Florida one year, remember that disaster? Our only choice was a rock solid whole frozen turkey. Right? There wasn't the options, I feel like, that are available today. Nowadays, you said you want to serve four people. The butcher will give you a half of a turkey. There's no such thing as a 6-pound turkey, right? And sometimes we are at the mercy of our farmer. I know last year it was a real panic where Farmer Colin, this is a true story, right? Scotch line turkeys out of Elmira, right? Fantastic local farmer, he's like, they're just not small this year, right? Like, we can't control the size of the bird. So they started splitting them down the middle. So then you would get the best of both worlds, you know, one leg, one breast, thigh, that sort of thing. There's options. They do, you know, bone, they'll take out the bone for you. So you, like you said, you've had your rolled turkey before. It's going to cook in an hour, no brainer. There's options.
That's fascinating. I mean, to have a half a turkey is such a great option for a smaller amount of people. I mean, we talk about big family gatherings and things like that. Some people have smaller gatherings or even just a random Sunday dinner. What a great option.
Exactly. Yeah. We've even, and I do the, last year I did this, I did the legs and the breast separate. Like it was all deboned. Or I guess there was still bone in it, but it was all cut up. So we roasted the legs and thighs in one pan, took them out, rest, breasts in the other, took them out, rest, carved, Caesars the next day.
And then can you still brine the half turkey?
I sure did. I did a dry brine. Yeah.
All right. I like it.
Check out our blog on turkey. It's going to give you all of these details. If there's something like, Jody, I don't want to hear that you were drinking margaritas in Florida and that's why you had issues with the turkey there. Our blog is very detailed and very thorough and helps you answer every single question that you may have on what and how and why you want to cook it a certain way and how to go about doing that, right? Kirsty talked about cooking the legs and the breast separately. That's how you're going to get perfection, right? You can't cook the thighs to 175 and the breasts to 165 and expect it to be the exact same time and they're done.
Jody, I'm so glad that you brought up the blog because you're right. It's not, you call it a blog, but it's not the traditional 250 word blog. It's actually an instruction manual on how to cook turkeys a variety of ways. And I think that that's such a great tool. And we're just kind of skimming the surface on some of the things that I had questions about. But for anybody that wants to cook a turkey or maybe experiment with how to cook a turkey, I think everything is in there. And if anybody has a question, they can always reach out to either of you to sort of get the answer and even further enhance your meal and make more memories and have more fun while doing it. So thank you for taking the time to write it. And I would encourage everybody to check it out because there's lots of great information in there.
My soundbite, this is Jody's Turkey Manifesto. You might even get access to the turkey hotline after reading this manifesto. So don't sleep on it.
Cooking turkey is a journey. You know, that book, the Choose Your Own Adventure book, right? That's the same that applies with making a turkey, right? Larding, barding, basting, butter bath, you know, wet brine, dry brine, rest it, cook it separately, spatchcock it, right? All of those questions. Do I have to tent it? Do I have to stuff it? Can I cook my stuffing separately? Can I use a spice rub, right? All of those questions will be answered in this blog for you.
Thank you for joining us in the kitchen today. If you'd like to know more about what we talked about, including recipes, recommendations, and links to Jody and Kirsty's full selection of online classes, you can find everything in the show notes or visit the Culinary Studio website. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to the podcast and take a moment to leave us a review. Chef Over Your Shoulder is a member of the Bespoke Productions Hub podcast network. Happy cooking.